conservative,
Christian, mother, wife,
Air Force veteran,
gun rights advocate.
This is Stacy on the Right. Here's your host, Stacy Washington.
And you are back live and direct with Stacy Washington. We are doing the most. We have the third hour up ahead of us. Starts right now. Find out more at StacyOnTheRight.com. Follow me on X. I'm Stacy on the Right. You can get all my content there. I've been posting videos pretty much every day of Kamala Harris, the real Kamala Harris. You can check those out on my Twitter feed, which now Twitter's known as X, but you get my drift. Welcoming into the program, Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith. She comes to us from nationalpolice.org, National Police Association. And we have so much to discuss tonight. Sergeant Betsy, thanks for coming on.
Hey, Stacy. Great to be with you tonight.
I'm glad you're here. We have so much to discuss. Let's talk. We'll start in Venezuela and work our way up. There's a gang there giving the green light to target police officers. What's going on with that?
So Tren de Aragua, TDA, they are the largest criminal organization in Venezuela. And in the last several years, they have branched out, you know, taking their criminal organization on the road to various countries. And now what we see in the United States is that they have a real firm footing here in the United States. And just recently, the Albuquerque Police Department got some intelligence that they their leadership has greenlit the attack of law enforcement officers in the United States, in Denver, Chicago, New York, Miami, and others. And they have big footholds in these cities. They have a huge population in Denver. And I don't think people realize that. I was a little surprised to read this myself. Denver has 42,000 migrants, illegal aliens, that they are currently housing, really more than any other large city. But Tren de Aragua is the subject of over 100 open federal investigations right now in the U.S. And that's just federal investigation. That doesn't count all the local crime that they commit. They're being looked at for the murder of a Venezuelan policeman who retired and immigrated to the United States. He was living in Miami. They deal drugs, they deal guns, and they traffic women and children, Stacey. Just so great that we were able to import them here into the United States.
So I think it's interesting because when you said they have greenlit the attacking of police officers, I just quite naturally assumed that this was going on in Venezuela. But you're talking about here in the U.S. So the gang has given the green light to target police officers here in the U.S. where we're already suffering from a police shortage and an overabundance of illegal aliens.
Absolutely. And where we've already had over 226 police officers shot in the United States already this year. And Tren de Aragua, they are extraordinarily violent. They actually took over the largest prison in Venezuela. And before they started to branch out, the authorities have since taken that prison back. But they, just for example, they are suspected, and they have several people in custody. They committed a very violent jewelry heist in Denver in June, where a group of them, about nine of them, went in to a jewelry store where an all-female staff was working. And they terrorized these women, stole tens of thousands of dollars worth of jewelry. And they are able to get into this country because we no longer vet people at the southern border the way that we used to. You know, in the past, our Border Patrol partners were able to talk to Venezuelan authorities and run names by them. You know, there's obviously international computer systems, things like that. And Tren de Aragua, they're getting smarter. They've stopped. Their younger members don't have the same kind of tattoos as the older members. They try to present themselves as asylum seekers. And I hope everybody knows that when you get to the southern border and you say you're an asylum seeker, especially from Venezuela, we pretty much just let you in, give you an iPhone, some new Nikes, pocket full of cash, and a court date that's in about 4 or 5 years.
or 10 or 11 years. Just it's really kind of irrelevant because these people aren't ever going to show up to court and they're not here for asylum. And so it really doesn't matter what court date we give them because everybody throws those pieces of paper away. Those papers don't even make it with them to the airport or the charter bus that they take to their final destination. So then that leads us to natural segue to police departments across the country who are really doing anything they can by hook or by crook to get new recruits.
Right. This stems from a report. I had so many people contact me about this. The Plano, Texas Police Department is putting up billboards in various parts of the country, and they're saying, hey, you want to make about $109,000, come be a cop for the Plano Police Department. Now, not every cop in this country is making six figures, but what we are seeing is police departments can afford it. And Plano, Texas, if you're not familiar with Plano, Texas, it's a very well-to-do suburb of Dallas, but they can afford to pay their police officers a topped out pay of over a paycheck of over six figures. But we're also seeing police departments that are offering bonuses, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 bonuses. They're offering things like take home cars and other benefits. And these kind of incentives are having some success. We're seeing some suburban areas around the country are getting their police staffing back up to just about where it should be. But our big blue cities around the country, Seattle, Portland, L.A., New York, they're still horrifically short-staffed. And, of course, that makes the country less safe, despite what Kamala Harris has been talking about, where she says that less police officers make your community more safe. We actually know that's not true, but people are starting to come back to the profession. We hired more police officers in 2023 in this country than we did in the previous 4 years. We're also seeing a relaxing of certain policies. Tattoo policies are being hugely relaxed, something my husband absolutely detests. But, you know, my generation, the only people who had tattoos when I was a young police officer were bikers and Vietnam veterans. That's changing, and we know that tattoos are mainstream. Lots of cops and military personnel have tattoos. But they're also relaxing the physical requirements. Mm. We're seeing a relaxing of the education requirements. Those are not good things. And lastly, on that topic, I just want to say that most people don't become cops a lot of money. It's nice to make a good living. I was happy to be able to pay my mortgage and support my family when I was a police officer, but that's not why we become cops. We've got to go back to making it a profession that is treated with honor and respect by political leaders, by the public in general, although I think most of the public is really throwing their support behind law enforcement these days.
Well, and I think it starts from a very young age. There are just certain little boys, and yes, I said little boys. No offense to women who are police officers, but the bulk of the force is men, and they're little boys, and they get their first little police car toy, and they see a police officer out somewhere, and they go over and they ask questions, and from then on, they want to be a police officer, and often those kids who have that desire from that young age are the ones who they really stick with it. They really never change their mind. They want to do it, and they go ahead and they become officers. And that's something that we see kids get turned off of when they grow up and learn in grade school, eighth grade, ninth grade, 10th grade, that all cops are bad, ACAB, all these different Antifa type things. And their teachers are throwing these horrible statistics at them and saying that, cops are racist and cops are terrible and they kill black people, and that can turn kids off. They don't want to go out and become a killer. They thought they were going to save their community and protect their friends and neighbors. And so you're right about the respect quotient, and we've got to be parents. We have to be careful to find out what your kids are learning in school and talk to them and get around that table, get them in the minivan where they're looking straight ahead and so are you, and find out what their thoughts are. about these very important issues. Like, you know, what do you think about police officers? What do you think about some of the stories you're seeing in the news? Are you guys talking about this at school? Do you guys have a news channel that you watch every day? Find out from your kids what they're learning about officers. You'd be surprised. And then you can help debunk those myths. And also, you know, you might have a police officer that's literally you're raising one in your house. And we want that. We want police officers to come from the communities they live in and to love those communities and protect them and serve them.
Well, and you're right. Remember after the death of George Floyd, we started seeing these school assignments, especially in grade schools where, you know, it was like, you know, talking about how bad police officers were. And we were getting all kinds of stories at the National Police Association from police parents who were saying, yeah, my kid came home with this homework assignment. And my kid, everybody knows my kid, you know, my kid has a police parent. And you know, the other kids are saying, oh, you know, your dad kills people, your mom kills black people, all that. We're seeing less of that. But you're absolutely right. This is a situation where teachers and ministers and our community leaders need to be talking up police officers. And we used to do that through things like the DARE program and other community policing efforts. But because, especially in the large cities, so many police departments are so incredibly short-staffed, those communities very often go by the wayside. We were just teaching police officers in Kansas, they're juvenile officers, and I talked to so many of the DARE officers who said, you know, they had had to take a break for 2 or 3 years not going into the schools and teaching grade school police programs because they didn't have enough people and they're just starting to get their staffing back. So that's something, because we're going to run out of cops eventually, Stacey. We're going to run out of the younger people who want to apply to become police officers because we're still seeing record resignations and early retirements from people who are currently on the job.
Yep, and the key to everything we're discussing tonight is to tell the truth. And you can also help with that with your family. If you see a police officer out in public, you go over to them, greet them, you know, shake their hand, thank them for what they're doing. Let other people see you doing that. Let your kids see you doing that. You know, ask them how their day is going, maybe. I mean, they might not have time to hold a conversation with you, but I usually see them at the gas station, actually. And the last time my daughter and I, we were actually gassing up, but it was in our neighborhood. I decided to go in and get something. You know, I always need something. I'm just somebody's mom. And so I was like, I got to run the gas station and get something. She said, oh, I said, oh, there's an officer. And we looked at each other and we just walked over to him. And I was like, excuse me, officer. And he turned and looked at me and I could see the look on his face. He was just negotiating. What's this? What's going on here? And I just said, hey, I wanted to say thank you. Thanks for what you're doing here. We appreciate it. And he looked at me and he looked at my daughter. And he looked surprised, and then he just, you can get his shoulders kind of relaxed, and he said, thank you. I appreciate that. And we were like, we appreciate you. Have a good one. And we went inside, and he was finishing up with his car, and he got in, and by the time we came out, he had already pulled away. I don't think it hurt him. I hope that he went home to that night feeling a little more appreciated. And obviously, we're in the suburbs, so it wasn't like he was literally battling crime at that moment, but he still is a police officer, and the stigma associated with him is prevalent in the suburbs. It's everywhere. You can't get away from it as an officer, and I think they need the reinforcement.
Well, and you know, Stacey, I guarantee you that he went home and told his wife about it. He told the guys the next day in roll call about it, and because those kinds of moments are what carry us, and these days they have to carry us for weeks on end. So anybody listening, you know, if you have that opportunity to just smile and thank a police officer, especially if you have a kid with you, because cops love kids. And if you can role model that to a young person, or maybe while you're talking to a police officer, another mom and a kid see that. I mean, it's so incredibly impactful. And as we continue this uphill battle of high crime and low police staffing. And now, of course, it's been so politicized. We're getting into this election season where we have, you know, people who espouse policies that are anti-police. We need every kind word we can get.
Yep. And just think of it in the same way that what happens to you on the inside when you're at work doing whatever you do and you get a pat on the back from a coworker. Hey, you know, I noticed you so-and-so, or your boss, or what happens when you come home from work and your wife or your husband says, oh, by the way, thanks so much for doing, you know, whatever that was. And you're thinking, oh, you noticed? My gosh, you know,
right.
You know, because with our spouses, it's like, just do it, get it done. You know, there's no thanks in it. Just get it, finish it. And so you, any kind word, you're like, oh, I'm like a little camel in the desert. You just threw me a cup of water. Thank you. That's how they feel and they need it. And I want people to think about this because I commiserate with the police officers, not because doing radio is dangerous. It's not. But the level of vitriol and hate that can come your way for doing your job, that's what I identify with them with. It's not so much that there's no danger in radio. There's no guns or bullets or anything like that, but there is the email. There is the people, you know, sending you their thoughts. There is, I heard you say such and such, and here are all the statistics that prove you're wrong. And by the time you get done reading it, you're thinking, okay, did they listen to my show? Maybe they're confusing me with another radio host. I don't even remember talking about this. And you know, if you get someone who's a persistent hater, who emails you all the time, who is literally like they're trying to live inside your head, I understand that part of it. I understand that the officers, they want to turn it off, and sometimes they can't turn it off. That's what the radio is like. Radio is like that, where sometimes you have a hard time turning it off and just going about like, can you just have the weekend? The weekend is a time where most people are off, but not if you're in radio. It's like you're never, ever off. So officers feel that way. They're never off. So we need to just, this is me imploring you to take a moment and see a little bit, just a little teensiest bit of what they're dealing with. And then to thank them for putting up with it for the pay that I just told you. The pay you were talking about, that's an outlier. Most officers make between 50 and 70,000. The new guys, they make just, you know, 50 or less. So they're not getting paid a lot to do the job. So they really must love it. Anything else you'd like to add? We so appreciate your time here. And actually, wait a minute. The Secret Service Director, I can't let you get away without talking about that. Sergeant Betsy Brantner Smith of National Police Association, nationalpolice.org. What about this next Secret Service Director? I don't like the new guy, by the way, the replacement for Cheadle. He seems lackluster.
Well, I got to tell you, he hasn't come up with a lot of good answers to any of these questions. And now it looks like what we're seeing is really a systemic problem with this organization going back several years. And that's going to be a real problem at a time where we, the American people who want to be involved in the political process, are depending on the Secret Service, not just to keep the candidates safe and the, you know, all their protectees, but to keep us safe at rallies and events and things like that. And so now we're finding a lot of other things out about Kimberly Cheadle, the former director, who made you know, you wonder how in God's name did she get that job? But now you've got this acting director, and I think that he'll probably be the acting director until President Biden is done with his term. I can't imagine they're going to try to confirm another director. But he's not coming up with a lot of the right answers. And they have a real hard way to go right now to be able to reassure the American people, much less the protectees. I can't even imagine what these conversations are behind the scenes with the various campaigns. I would be, were I a candidate, boy, I would be very, very concerned. And so it's going to be interesting to watch. And the American people need to have faith in their federal law enforcement. And quite frankly, as a retired local law enforcement officer, I've talked to a lot of local and state cops about this, who are concerned about having to work with the Secret Service and wondering, are we going to get blamed for not doing the right thing, or are they going to do the right thing? Because we're finding out that not just at the Pennsylvania rally where President Trump got shot, but we're finding out at many other events and in many different occasions, they cut corners. They didn't listen to the intelligence. It's extremely concerning. And we still don't really know who's handling the internal investigation, if you will. The FBI says they're investigating the shooter, but who's investigating the Secret Service?
Well, I feel like that's intentional. I feel like we don't know on purpose. It's like, you know, there were some questions that were asked. I remember Senator Ted Cruz, he asked some very pointed questions of the acting director. And you know who he reminded me of when he was answering? He reminded me of Kimberly Cheadle. He sounded unprepared. He sounded as if he was hedging his answers. He had a little bit of a hairline temper going on. You know, when you're going into these hearings, you have to go sit in a sauna, go sit in a hot tub, go sit in an ice bath, whatever you need to do to basically release every emotion in your body, because you're going in to get a grilling. If you don't know that, like, where have you been this past decade? You are going before a special committee in the Senate or the House, and you are going to be grilled by one side of the aisle or the other, or in this case, both. And you need to be prepared to be grilled. And not just, I don't mean no affect at all. I mean, you need to be prepared to be grilled in the way that you should come with some data. You should have a few folders on the table in front of you. You should be able to flip through and say, you know what, I thought you might ask me about that. And I saw the way things went with Director Cheadle, so I decided to do a little research. And here's what I know. And if it's still not satisfactory, you can say, well, it looks like I prepared, but not enough in the direction of where these questions are going. So I can promise you I'll get you more information. We've yet to see that. Why do these people keep showing up to these meetings like this is their first day of work?
Well, there's an arrogance to that. There, when you show up unprepared before the legislature, basically what you're telling them is you're not important to me. I don't really answer to you. And when you don't answer to our legislators that we elect, what you're saying is I don't answer to you, the American people. And I find that arrogant. I mean, you were in the military. I was a cop. We've probably both been somewhere where somebody of a higher rank was dressing us down, right? You know, yelling at us. We did something wrong. And exactly what you said, you know, you prepare for those things. And then if you don't have the answer, you say, I'm so sorry. I am unprepared to answer that. But bring me back tomorrow, or bring me back on next Tuesday or whatever, and I will have the answer. And you
write something down. You write it down. you pick up a pen and you write, or you have people with you and you gesture or eyebrow raise and that person writes it down. So you know you have to get it back. I remember getting grilled over numbers, aircraft readiness numbers. And I wasn't the primary person who was getting grilled. It was my boss. But I remember the grilling and he said, well, I only report the numbers. The crew chiefs actually repair the planes. And he said, but these numbers, the guy who was grilling us said, but these numbers don't just end in my office. They go all the way up to the White House. He said, so you'll understand if I want these numbers to change. And he was like, we want them to change too. And he was like, they better change. And I was just sitting there thinking, how can we do it? Because I don't know how to fix planes. I was thinking, what am I going to do about this? But the numbers did improve. We did actually find a hard break and figured out what it was about and put three aircraft back into commission, which then improved our numbers. But, you know, sometimes you need to be grilled. I mean, if you care about your job, that's the heart of the issue here is Sergeant Betsy, the Cheadle. She didn't care about her job. She showed up unprepared, big middle finger to the committee. They ripped her a new one again and again and again for 4 hours. And she finally decided, you know what? They're right. I should resign. And she resigned. And then you have this other guy come in and he's got her same attitude. I think he should resign too, honestly, because it seems like he oversaw the refusal to give them more more resources. And you know,
oh, he definitely has culpability.
Yeah, he should go. He should totally go. He should be fired. But in the absence of anyone to fire him, he should resign in disgrace because he made an utter ass of himself in that hearing. It just didn't look good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think we're going to continue to hear more about this. But I don't know if I really don't know if we're ever going to get the whole story. But the Secret Service is yet another federal agency filled with good, you know, street level cops. But where their leadership, or I should say their management, because these two we're talking about weren't very good leaders.
No.
Where they have that arrogance of people who don't feel they have to answer to anyone.
Well, they are in a position now where, you know, a rarity has occurred, a singularity in the force in the universe, and a black hole might open up. And that is Republicans and Democrats are upset with them over what happened. And I think for the Democrats, it's not so much that they care about what happens to Trump. It's that they understand that the Secret Service protects all of these individuals. And some of them are Democrats, and they don't want to see anybody get assassinated. I don't think they'd mind anything happening to Trump, but they certainly don't want to see anything happen to Biden or the Obamas or any of these other people who are, you know, they're Democrats. And so they're concerned, and they want to know if there's something that can be done to improve what's going on. And I at least we can take heart in that, even if it's self-serving, at least it serves the purpose of all of the Secret Service, the leadership, the management being improved. So bipartisanship for the win in this case. Tell everyone how to find out more and any closing thoughts with the National Police Association.
Hey, Stacey, if everybody could just go to nationalpolice.org, take a look at the great things that we do, sign up for our newsletter. We have this great newsletter, this incredible team of writers that publish so much great content, including so much pro-police information, so much about crime statistics, things like that, really interesting stuff. And there's a donate button at the top. Hit that and help us continue to help not just American law enforcement officers, but the citizens that we're trying to help protect.
Yep. The big deal here is we need to help the officers. It's about more than just kind of saying nice things, although they do need to hear nice things from us. We also need to support the organizations that support them, and that is National Police Association. So the donate button's there. Check it out. The newsletter's amazing. Thank you so much, Sergeant Betsy, for coming on.
Thanks, Stacey.
All right, have a great evening. Talk to you soon.